Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Dan Friedel, and Bruce Alpert. Later, Barbara Klein reads a classic American short story from the Learning English archives. But first, this report.
Dubai is the commercial capital of the oil-rich United Arab Emirates in the Persian Gulf. But officials want to turn it into the world's smartest city. Earlier this year, Dubai announced plans to be the world's first city to use self-flying taxis. In June, it placed the first robot police officer at shopping centers and places popular with visitors. Dubai police officials now say they plan to deploy self-driving vehicles to patrol city streets by the end of the year. Dubai will be the first in the world to deploy the OR3 vehicle, according to the Singapore company that builds it. The company, Otsa Digital, recently signed an agreement with the Dubai Police Force to supply the driverless robots. The vehicles look a lot like most other automobiles, but are much smaller. They are equipped with cameras, machine learning tools, and 3D technology to help them operate independently. The robots automatically charge themselves when power gets low. The vehicle's cameras can scan faces and record registration information to check for criminals and possible illegal activity. A police official said the robot can recognize people in any area. It will be used to identify suspicious objects and follow suspects. We seek to augment operations with the help of technology such as robots, said Dubai's police chief. We always search for the best technology to serve our police work for a safer and smarter city. The OR3 can communicate with computers at police centers in different locations. The patrolling robot is able to send data and video to the centers where operators can control the vehicle remotely. The vehicles can also work together with drones that can be launched from the back of the robot. The drones can then follow the vehicle and provide support from the air. The CEO of Otsa Digital, Ting Ming Ling, says the use of such vehicles is designed to help humans with their jobs, not replace them. Ultimately, robots exist to improve the quality of human lives, where men take on high-value jobs while robots perform the low-skilled ones, he said. I'm Brian Lynn.
Major League Baseball's website says the Toronto Blue Jays signed Eric Pardinho, a teenager from Brazil, on July 2nd. Pardinho is a pitcher. He can throw a baseball over 145 kilometers per hour. That is just about the average speed of a fast pitch in Major League Baseball. But Pardinho should get even better. After all, he is only 16. If Pardinho makes it to the major leagues, he will be only the fourth Brazilian-born player to play at that level. Cleveland Indians catcher Yan Gomes was the first. Pardinho was rated as the fifth best international prospect by MLBPipeline.com. He throws right-handed and is only 1.72 meters tall, which is short for a pitcher. He received over $1 million for agreeing to play in the Blue Jays organization. Pardinho said he was 6 years old when he started playing. His uncle saw him playing paddleball on the beach and thought he might make a good baseball player. So when they returned to their hometown of Bastos, they started practicing. While baseball is not well known in Brazil, Bastos has a large Japanese influence, and baseball is a popular sport in Japan. Pardinho's grandparents on his mother's side of the family are Japanese. Pardinho started getting attention in 2016 when he pitched against the Dominican Republic in the under-16 Pan Am Games. He struck out 12 batters in the game, which means he threw three strikes to each batter. The Dominican Republic has a strong baseball tradition. Many Brazilian coaches see Pardinho as a player who could help the national baseball team make the Olympics when the sport returns at the 2020 Tokyo Games. Baseball players who have batted against Pardinho say he is very good, even though he is short. Victor Coutinho said, "His height doesn't matter, because his arm can do wonders." Pardinho's coach is Mitsuyoshi Sato. He helps Pardinho improve and get stronger, but he also makes sure the prospect does not throw too often. "I don't want him to do too many fastballs now, because I worry about a possible injury," he said. Pardinho thinks he could make baseball more popular in Brazil if he goes on to have a good career. Maybe more and more Brazilians, not only those of Japanese heritage, will think of playing on a diamond too, he said. I'm Dan Friedel.
America is expected to face a shortage of workers in some jobs. Some lawmakers, however, are worried that not enough people are being trained to be able to do the work. For example, in 2024, America will need 9.2 million wind turbine workers, twice as many as in 2014. The United States also will need millions of additional health workers. People are needed to do the work of physical therapists, home health aides, and nurse practitioners. The information about America's future job needs comes from a recent report by the United States Labor Department. It was a desire to prepare people to fill these high-demand jobs that led the House of Representatives to pass a bill to update a 1984 law. The 33-year-old law sets federal policy for education that prepares people for jobs, many of which require technical skills. The new bill gives America's 50 state governments more freedom on how they can use federal money to prepare people for jobs. Supporters of the legislation say it encourages states to work more closely with local business leaders. The goal is to set up classes and programs that better prepare people for jobs in which demand for workers is expected to be highest. Congresswoman Virginia Fox is a Republican from the southern U.S. state of North Carolina. She also is chairwoman of the House Committee on Education and the Workforce. Fox said about 6 million jobs are now going unfilled because they require technical skills and knowledge most people looking for work do not have. If we want to help participants move from government assistance and hold a job, then we must set them on a path toward jobs and industries that are currently and will remain competitive, Fox said. The House of Representatives passed the bill called the Accelerating Individuals into the Workforce Act by a vote of 377-34. The bill now must pass the Senate before it can go to the White House for President Donald Trump's approval or veto. Some Democrats said the bill is helpful, but they say it does not do enough to prepare people for technical and health jobs. Congressman Lloyd Doggett is a Democrat from the American southwestern state of Texas. He said this one very modest bill does not add one new dollar to address the challenges that those who want to rise from welfare to work need. The bill sets aside $100 million from a current job training program for 1 year, Doggett said. At a House hearing in February, some people suggested that students are not being encouraged to sign up for job training programs offered by two-year colleges. Instead, most students are encouraged to enter four-year colleges that often do not provide technical job training. Mike Rowe heads Mike Rowe Works Foundation, an organization that helps people seeking job skills. He also is a host of the television shows Dirty Jobs and Somebody's Gotta Do It. He spoke about his own career training during a February hearing of the House Subcommittee on Early Childhood, Elementary, and Secondary Education.
But a four-year school would have been a huge mistake at that point in my life. I was 17 years old. I had no money, and I had no idea of what I wanted to do. The local community college offered hundreds of courses in my price range, so that's where I went, and that experience opened doors that I didn't even know existed.
The Labor Department reported that employers are expected to increase hiring in health care, including eye and ear care. Other high-demand jobs include truck drivers, personal finance advisors, and internet developers. I'm Bruce Alpert.
Now, Barbara Klein brings us the classic American short story, The Last Leaf, by O. Henry.
Many artists lived in the Greenwich Village area of New York. Two young women named Sue and Johnsy shared a studio apartment at the top of a three-story building. Johnsy's real name was Joanna. In November, a cold, unseen stranger came to visit the city. This disease, pneumonia, killed many people. Johnsy lay on her bed, hardly moving. She looked through the small window. She could see the side of the brick house next to her building. One morning, a doctor examined Johnsy and took her temperature. Then he spoke with Sue in another room. "She has one chance in, let us say, 10," he said. "And that chance is for her to want to live. Your friend has made up her mind that she is not going to get well. Has she anything on her mind?" She wanted to paint the Bay of Naples in Italy someday," said Sue. "Paint?" said the doctor. "Bosh! Has she anything on her mind worth thinking twice? A man, for example?" "A man," said Sue, "is a man worth... But no, doctor, there is nothing of the kind." "I will do all that science can do," said the doctor. "But whenever my patient begins to count the carriages at her funeral, I take away 50% from the curative power of medicines." After the doctor had gone, Sue went into the workroom and cried. Then she went to Johnsy's room with her drawing board, whistling Ragtime. Johnsy lay with her face toward the window. Sue stopped whistling, thinking she was asleep. She began making a pen and ink drawing for a story in a magazine. Young artists must work their way to art by making pictures for magazine stories. Sue heard a low sound, several times repeated. She went quickly to the bedside. Johnsy's eyes were open wide. She was looking out the window and counting backward. 12, she said, and a little later, 11, and then 10, and 9, and then 8, and 7, almost together. Sue looked out the window. What was there to count? There was only an empty yard and the blank side of the house 7 meters away. An old ivy vine, going bad at the roots, climbed halfway up the wall. The cold breath of autumn had stricken leaves from the plant until its branches, almost bare, hung on the bricks. "What is it, dear?" asked Sue. 6. said Johnsy quietly. "They're falling faster now. 3 days ago, there were almost 100. It made my head hurt to count them. But now it's easy. There goes another one. There are only 5 left now."
5 what, dear?" asked Sue.
"Leaves on the plant. When the last one falls, I must go, too. I've known that for 3 days. Didn't the doctor tell you?"
"Oh, I never heard of such a thing," said Sue. What have old ivy leaves to do with your getting well? And you used to love that vine. Don't be silly. Why, the doctor told me this morning that your chances for getting well real soon were, let's see, exactly what he said. He said, the chances were 10 to 1. Try to eat some soup now. And let me go back to my drawing so I can sell it to the magazine and buy food and wine for us. You needn't get any more wine, said Jauncey, keeping her eyes fixed out the window. There goes another one. No, I don't want any soup. That leaves just 4. I want to see the last one fall before it gets dark. Then I'll go, too. Jauncey, dear, said Sue, will you promise me to keep your eyes closed and not look out the window until I'm done working? I must hand those drawings in by tomorrow. Tell me as soon as you have finished, said Jauncey, closing her eyes and lying white and still as a fallen statue. I want to see the last one fall. I'm tired of waiting. I'm tired of thinking. I want to turn loose my hold on everything and go sailing down, down, just like one of those poor, tired leaves. Try to sleep, said Sue. I must call Mr. Behrman up to be my model for my drawing of an old miner. Don't try to move until I come back. Old Behrman was a painter who lived on the ground floor of the apartment building. Behrman was a failure in art. For years, he had always been planning to paint a work of art, but had never yet begun it. He earned a little money by serving as a model to artists who could not pay for a professional model. He was a fierce little old man who protected the 2 young women in the studio apartment above him. Sue found Behrman in his room. In one area was a black canvas that had been waiting 25 years for the first line of paint. Sue told him about Jauncey and how she feared that her friend would float away like a leaf. Old Behrman was angered at such an idea. Are there people in the world with the foolishness to die because leaves drop off a vine? Why do you let that silly business come in her brain? She is very sick and weak, said Sue, and the disease has left her mind full of strange ideas. This is not any place in which one so good as Miss Jauncey shall lie sick, yelled Behrman. Some day I will paint a masterpiece, and we shall all go away. Jauncey was sleeping when they went upstairs. Sue pulled the shade down to cover the window. She and Behrman went into the other room. They looked out a window fearfully at the ivy vine. Then they looked at each other without speaking. A cold rain was falling, mixed with snow. Behrman sat and posed as the miner. The next morning, Sue awoke after an hour's sleep. She found Jauncey with wide-open eyes staring at the covered window. "Pull up the shade. I want to see," she ordered quietly. Sue obeyed. After the beating rain and fierce wind that blew through the night, there yet stood against the wall 1 ivy leaf. It was the last one on the vine. It was still dark green at the center, but its edges were colored with the yellow. It hung bravely from the branch about 7 meters above the ground. "It is the last one," said Jauncey. "I thought it would surely fall during the night. I heard the wind. It will fall today, and I shall die at the same time." "Dear, dear," said Sue, leaning her worn face toward the bed. "Think of me, if you won't think of yourself. What would I do?" But Jauncey did not answer. The next morning, when it was light, Jauncey demanded that the window shade be raised. The ivy leaf was still there. Jauncey lay for a long time looking at it. And then she called to Sue, who was preparing chicken soup. "I've been a bad girl," said Jauncey. "Something has made that last leaf stay there to show me how bad I was. It is wrong to want to die. You may bring me a little soup now." An hour later, she said, "Someday I hope to paint the Bay of Naples." Later in the day, the doctor came, and Sue talked to him in the hallway. "Even chances," said the doctor. "With good care, you'll win. And now I must see another case I have in your building. Behrman, his name is. Some kind of an artist, I believe. Pneumonia, too. He is an old, weak man, and his case is severe. There's no hope for him, but he goes to the hospital today to ease his pain." The next day, the doctor said to Sue, "She's out of danger. You won. Nutrition and care now. That's all." Later that day, Sue came to the bed where Jauncey lay and put one arm around her. "I have something to tell you, White Mouse," she said. "Mr. Behrman died of pneumonia today in the hospital. He was sick only 2 days. They found him the morning of the first day in his room downstairs, helpless with pain. His shoes and clothing were completely wet and icy cold. They could not imagine where he had been on such a terrible night. And then they found a lantern, still lighted, and they found a ladder that had been moved from its place, and art supplies and a painting board with green and yellow colors mixed on it. And look out the window, dear, at the last ivy leaf on the wall. Didn't you wonder why it never moved when the wind blew? Oh, darling, it is Behrman's masterpiece. He painted it there the night that the last leaf fell."
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.